नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ओम 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 नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
श्रीमद् भागवतम Canto 3, Chapter 20, Text 31, Translation and Commentary by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada.
Guhantim Vriyayatmanam
Guhantim Vriyayatmanam
Nilalakabharutinim
Nilalakabharutinim
Upalabhya Sura Dharma
Upalabhya Sura Dharma
Sarve Sammohustriyam
Sarve Sammohustriyam.
Adorned with dark tresses, she, tresses means bunches of hair. Adorned with dark tresses, she hid herself, as it were, out of shyness. Upon seeing that girl, the asuras were all infatuated with an appetite for sex. Purport. The difference between demons and demigods is that a beautiful woman very easily attracts the minds of demons, but she cannot attract the mind of a godly person. A godly person is full of knowledge, and a demoniac person is full of ignorance. Just as a child is attracted by a beautiful doll, similarly, a demon who is less intelligent and full of ignorance is attracted by material beauty and an appetite for sex. The godly person knows that this nicely dressed and ornamented attraction of high breasts, high hips, beautiful nose, and fair complexion is maya. All the beauty a woman can display is only a combination of flesh and blood. Sri Shankara Acharya has advised all persons not to be attracted by the interaction of flesh and blood. They should be attracted by the real beauty in spiritual life. The real beauty is Krishna and Radha. One who is attracted by the beauty of Radha and Krishna cannot be attracted by the false beauty of this material world. That is the difference between a demon and a godly person or devotee.
Bhakti Parishanu Bhavo Viraktir Anyatra. A succinct definition of bhakti is given in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that it means to, bhakti means to experience the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And concomitantly, one will be free from all other desires. This material world is the world of unlimited desires. As Narottam Das Thakur says, Haiya Mayar Das Kari Nana Abhilash. When we become the servant of Maya, then we have so many desires. Whereas in spiritual existence, there's only one desire, to serve Radha and Krishna. Of course, though, that one basic desire may be manifested in different ways. That one may desire to cook nice foods for them, to anoint them with nice scents, to fan them. But it's a very focused kind of existence. This focus becomes dissipated when one comes to material existence. Vyavasaya atmika buddhi ekeha kuru nandana bahu shaka hi anantas cha buddhayo vyavasayana. One whose intelligence is fixed, then it's, by its very nature, it's one-pointed. Whereas material desires, they take many forms and the mind is never steady. Because it's always jumping from one desire to another. However, the topmost material attraction, the very root of all other material attractions, that from which all others expand, is this sexual desire. Pumsastriya mitmani bhavametam tayora ho hridya grantima huhu ato griha kshetra sutapta vitaya janasya mohoya mahamamitu. In this material world there are many attachments, such as to home, wife, children, wealth, country, etc. But at the root of all these desires is the attraction between male and female, which makes a very strong knot in the heart. And from that, one subsequently desires, I should have a home. Man, by nature, his tendency would be to be more renounced until and unless he gets a wife. Then there comes a need for home and land, and children come, and then one's concerned with money, and in this way one is bound in material existence by illusion of thinking of I, me and mine, aham mameti. Anytime we can ask in a public group, we ask that, or we can state, I just did this on Sunday evening in Mangala, that when one becomes married, one marries for the sake of happiness. But actually as soon as one is married, or even just as one is arranging, or as one is entering into it, then immediately all his anxieties increase. So I asked, someone can say this is true? And Igriha says immediately, yes. And this was coming not from like committed devotees, but it's just a fact of life. That as one gets more possessions which are essential for family life, then his anxieties increase. Because you have to maintain them. So this is the binding force in material life. The evolutionists, they explain, so-called explain, that the sexual drive is necessary for the species to propagate. Therefore, it has arisen out of evolutionary forces of chance. It's just complete rubbish, of course. Why matter should wish to propagate itself in a particular form? Matter is matter. It's a portable speaker. Come, tape recorder, tape player back. So it doesn't have any desire to propagate itself. It's just matter. So the body is just matter. But the evolutionists, who's one thing's for sure, that if they say intelligence has come about by evolution, then it's not a very good process, because their intelligence is so stupid. To say they think that the species they wish to, it's come about by natural selection, that the species wish to propagate themselves. But why would matter in want to propagate itself in any particular form? It's such a stupid theory. Anyway, those who are more intelligent, they come to Srimad Bhagavatam class, and they hear how it is not matter that has the desire to propagate, but this desire comes from the soul. Matter does not have desire. Desire is a symptom of consciousness. And consciousness is not a symptom of matter. Consciousness is a symptom of something different, intrinsically different to matter. So the soul, when the soul identifies with matter, then he talks nonsense, such as one kind of nonsense is to speak of matter designed to reproduce itself. Another kind of nonsense is love stories, romance, this kind of thing, which that comes about due to misidentifying with matter. Therefore, as Prabhupada writes here, one in knowledge is not attracted by matter. One in knowledge is attracted by the beauty of Radha and Krishna. So we can judge ourselves how much we are making spiritual advancement by how much we are attracted to the beauty of Radha and Krishna, and how much we are attracted to the meat of the body of a member of the opposite sex. By the arrangement of Maya, the sexual desire in man, in the male form and in the female form, in human species, it works in a different way. That a man is strong lust for the body of a woman, but the woman's desire is more calculated. What comes after that? After that comes Griha Kshetra Sutarte Vitaya. She wants that. That she, the woman carries babies, which is the result of sex life. And the woman desires that, a woman desires a man who can provide griha, kshetra, sutakta, vitai, home, land, children, money, all these things. So she desires that. That's why we'll find that women, they may not be so much desirous of marrying a man with a big strong body. She's more interested in marrying a man with a big strong bank account. Or a man who can control others, even if he's not physically very strong, but if he has some position of power, and women tend to be attracted to that. So this is Maya. The whole Maya is to think that we can enjoy, or that we even should enjoy, separately from Krishna. And that it's an absurd desire. For the soul, it is absurd to even think that he can or should or has any right to enjoy separately from Krishna. And he is rewarded, the spirit soul is rewarded for his absurdity by being attracted to the bodies of others, which is absurd because it's only meat. Body is meat. Actually, it's Prabhupada analyzed. We are not mangsavikara, Shankaracharya says. It is simply a transformation of meat. But the attraction, as Prabhupada noted, actually the attraction is toward the soul, not exactly towards the body. Because if we take the beautiful body of a woman, however beautiful, and that body happens to die, then no one will be attracted towards the same body, which is still as beautiful. Of course, there are, in the modern age, it's very common that there are varieties of sexual perverts, and it's quite possible that some are attracted to having sex with dead bodies. There's even a word for that, which I can't, in English, which I can't remember, for people who are attracted to having sex with dead bodies. But in general, people are not attracted by dead bodies. They're repulsed by them. They find it something horrible. The same body which people are feeling very attracted to, if that body, if the soul leaves the body, if it dies, then what was so attractive 5 minutes before, even if it doesn't die, even if the body doesn't die in an accident, so there's blood everywhere, but even externally looks as attractive as, or as externally looks as should look as attractive as previously, everything's all intact, but it's no longer attractive. So the attraction is towards the soul. Of course, generally, unless one's again a pervert, then a man will be attracted to young, beautiful bodies of women. Women's bodies that will be formed in a particular way. He won't be attracted to the 80-year-old body of a woman. Unless, again, he's some kind of pervert. Actually, it's all perverted. We say sexual perversion, but it's all perverted. The desire to enjoy any body is a perverted desire. Because the real desire should be not even to attempt to enjoy, but to simply serve Krishna. And to act in such a way that facilitates the enjoyment of Krishna, the Radha. Any other desire but that is perverted. This argument is sometimes used by perverts to say that, well, you know, sex, it's all the same. Whether it's homosex or heterosex, it's all sex. So what's the difference? The difference is that one is sanctioned by Shastra, because within that situation, sex, dhamma viruddho bhutasmi, dhamma viruddho kamasmi. What is that? Dhamma viruddho kamasmi. Then? Krishna says, I am that sex life which is not against dharma. So within that situation, that means sex life within marriage specifically for the propagation of dharmic children who will themselves be followers of dharma. Then that is not against the principle of religion. Krishna himself says, I represent that. So what's the difference, Rosa? What's the difference? Because in that situation, that activity of sex can be, in the case of conditioned souls, indulged in within the process of purification. And for liberated souls, the sex life is simply for the propagation of children. Or for highly elevated souls, like the Prajapatis, they beget children on the order of Narayana for filling the universe. Whereas sex is simply indulged in wholly and solely for the sake of bodily enjoyment, whether it's heterosexual or homosexual or whatever it may be, that binds one very deeply in material life. It is a sinful activity. And because homosex has no function whatsoever it has no function for producing children, then it is perverted. It is solely for the sake of sexual enjoyment. And even if we say, well, what about those who are having sex within marriage or outside of marriage, man and woman, even still it's not considered as perverted as homosex, because that can be adopted to dharmic principles, whereas homosex can never be adopted to religious principles. At the present time, there's a movement on the fringes of ISKCON to let homosexuality be allowed or recognized within Vaishnav society, but that cannot be, because it is not according, it's not allowed according to the principles of Shastra. If one has such a tendency, he may be a devotee and chant Hare Krishna, but if he indulges in that tendency, it immediately becomes extremely sinful. So he may say, well, anyway they're going to do it, so let them do it and chant Hare Krishna. Okay, let them do it. No, if they're going to do it anyway, chant Hare Krishna, but we're not going to say that it's all right to do it, or that there's any allowance for that. Of course, the modern society is so demoniac that in the Western world, you're not allowed to make any restrictions against homosexuals or any such thing. And now they're having homosexual marriages in the churches performed by homosexual priests. And if you speak against this, then according to law, it's against the law even to have to say anything against them. So demonic. And you might be laughing, but it will come to India soon probably, because they're importing everything demonic. This is all based on ignorance of what is the soul and what is the body. If we don't know what is the soul and what is the body and what is the difference, and we emphasize sense gratification as the only goal of life, then it must come to this, because sex life is not satisfying. And therefore people desire, let's try another way. Or they find that, well, it's... mostly men get on better with men and women get on better with women. They're all... they have very different kind of temperaments. So although in the modern age they... not only in the modern age, but in general they say, oh, the perfect life partner for me. That I'll be... will be perfect. I'll find a woman who will be the perfect match for me, and we love to do everything together. But actually, men and women, they're so different that it's very difficult to find any. Men have never understood women, and women have never understood men, because they have such a different way of thinking, and they don't really get on that well together. So, in Vedic society, they regulate this by restricting association between men and women. And on very strict rules also. It's not only to... one major reason for that is so that if men and women mix together all the time, then they're more prone to have sex, and then they fall down into totally material consciousness. It's also not good, because if there's excessive sex life, then the children produced are all useless. They're physically and mentally useless. Anyone who's breeding animals knows that. But if you let the bulls mix with the cows unrestrictedly, then the calves produced are just useless. It's the same with anything. When you're breeding pigeons or dogs or whatever it is, you have to restrict. Otherwise, the offspring will be physically and mentally degraded. So that's one reason that in Vedic society, mixing of men and women is restricted. Another reason is if they mix all the time, then it just becomes intolerable. That if you're just living with each other all the time, and the idea that we'll live together and we'll be perfect friends, it just doesn't work. And that's one reason. One of the many reasons why nowadays husbands and wives, they quarrel so much. It's because one reason is that they don't know how to relate with each other. The wife is supposed to be, according to Vedic culture, is supposed to be submissive to the husband, at least in behavior. Usually the wife, a submissive wife, usually gets everything that she wants from the husband. Whereas if she tries to demand it, then the man's ego becomes inflamed. And so it's a very subtle system that the wife doesn't demand anything from the husband, but she just acts very submissively and sweetly, and then whatever she asks, he'll automatically want to fulfill. It's a psychological ploy. But in the modern age, the women, they like to be equal, and then they fight. And well, another reason is they're together too much, and on the wrong terms, and it's definitely a formula for disaster. So anyway, I was saying that generally men like to relate with men more, and women like to relate with women more. So what this has come out to in the Western world is very common: homosexuality, both between men and women. They don't like each other. Men and women don't like each other, especially the way it's set up in the modern age. And marriage is too much headache. We don't want any children. Or if you want children, why bother having sex? You can adopt them. Now they're having man and man married, or woman and woman married, and they adopt children. Can you imagine the children are brought up by homosexuals? So, but this is all considered quite acceptable in modern society because they're demoniac. And they don't know what is the purpose of life, and they think the goal of life is just to enjoy. So if I enjoy men more than, if one man says I enjoy men more than women, then why not? Everything comes down to it. If you enjoy it, some restrictions are there. I enjoy shooting people dead. That's not allowed. Some restrictions are still there. Although you can shoot birds dead for a hobby, for a sport. There's a big uproar going on for the last several years in Britain that they're trying to stop the traditional hobby of hunting. They go on horses with dogs and they go hunting for foxes. And then they all chase after the fox, which runs away, and then the dogs catch it and rip it to pieces. So there's a lot of propaganda against this, and they're trying to make it illegal. But they're so much upset about a few foxes, but they're killing literally millions of cows. 35 million cows every year in America alone. And they're killing so many cows, and it must be billions of chickens. And they're killing millions of babies in the womb by abortion. So it's good that they're thinking, yes, we shouldn't be unkind to the foxes, but the whole system, they're just making a fuss about a few foxes, which anyway, from the farmer's point of view, probably have to be killed, because they are a nuisance to the farmer. From the farmer's point, they'll probably get killed anyway. The farmer was... hire someone to go around and shoot them. But what about the millions of cows that have been killed? So what it comes down to is that they are devoid of Shastra Gyan. One who is devoid of Shastra Gyan must act in a manner which is totally against his own self-interest. Natividu Swarthagatim Hivishnu. They do not know what is their own self-interest. And they take what is not for their self-interest as being for their self-interest. Beginning with married life is not for our self-interest. Or it could be for our self-interest if we realize that, yes, my ultimate goal is Vishnu, but I'm finding that the sexual desires are very strong, so it would be for my best interest to marry religiously and cultivate Krishna consciousness within married life. But similarly, people think that marriage is just some arrangement for sense enjoyment. And therefore so many problems arise in human society. Actually, all the problems arise because of forgetting Krishna, which is manifested by the desire to enjoy material life, among which multiple desires, the desire to enjoy sex, is the strongest. So it's good to discuss these things philosophically. Sometimes I'm asked to give classes to brahmacharis, and they think the brahmachari class means you make all jokes about how stupid women are or something like this. But that's not the matter. That's not the matter. Of course, it is absurd. But the desire to enjoy the bodies of others is absurd. And we can make jokes, but it's not that, well, you know, we are so much better and women are stupid. Or this kind of attitude, well, one will not be able to maintain brahmacharya. Should understand very deeply what is the philosophical underpinning of the desire to remain unmarried. If it's just some kind of, women are stupid, one will not be able to maintain brahmacharya by such an attitude. By humility, one can do so. By respecting our mothers, we can do so. Seeing all women as, not that by this learned outlook, Shastric outlook. Matrivat paradareshu. How many times did Prabhupada say, this is the symptom of a learned person? Not MSc, PhD, not even Shastri. He knows so many Shastras. But Matrivat paradareshu. What's the next one? Paradrevishu loshtavat. Then? Atmavat sarvabhuteshu yapashyati sapandita. One who sees every woman except his wife as mother, even small girl, one should address mother. Nowadays they don't like, oh, why are you calling me mother? Because they want to be playgirls. They've been so badly programmed by modern society. Matrivat paradareshu paradravyeshu loshtavat. It's someone else's property. It's not mine, so we should consider it as insignificant. As from my point of view, it's like garbage or some rock or something like this. It's not. We don't start a desire, oh, I should enjoy that. And with sympathy, seeing others like myself, why should I endeavor for my own so-called self-interest? Rather, we should see all others. Others are as important as me. Such a person is learning. This learning is meant to be inculcated by the International Society for Krishna Consciousness to society at large, based on the principle that we are all servants of Krishna. This is the essence of all knowledge. One who is attracted to Krishna cannot be attracted to the beauty of women. Yadavadhi namacheta Krishna padaravindu navanavarasa dhamanyut antanvasa. How's the next line? Bhavati mukha mukha sushtunishtivanamcha. Now I forgot it. That when I bhavati aham, when I remember how I used to enjoy, or that when the thought of enjoying a woman comes, then bhavati mukha vikara sushtu nishtivanamcha, my lips curl with distaste and I spit at the thought. Notice that he's not saying, I spit at women. I spit at the thought of enjoying. Spit at his own, at my own foolish desire to enjoy. One should be attracted by the beauty of Radha and Krishna. So that's important also. We should cultivate. The Krishna consciousness doesn't mean only negating material enjoyment, but it means also appreciating the beauty of Radha and Krishna. We should know what is our prayojan, what is our real goal of life. The real goal of life is to Madhura Vrinda Bipina Madhuri Prabesha Chaturisha, to enter into the beautiful pleasure groves of Vrindavan to serve Radha and Krishna there. If we don't cultivate this sense, then we may become a little dry, like the Mayavadis, who only speak of how miserable and this material world is, how it's all illusion. It's illusion, but what is reality? Reality is service to Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan. On the other hand, if we only speak of Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan, but don't cultivate a sense of how this material world is, or the desire to enjoy this material world is illusory, then we won't get that strong determination to properly serve Radha and Krishna. We won't discriminate properly between what is the service of Radha and Krishna and what is the service of our senses. So both sides have to be cultivated. We have to know what is our sambandha. Our sambandha is with Krishna, not with matter. And our prayojan is to, or our real necessity, is to enter the pleasure groves of Sri Vrindavan Dham to serve Radha and Krishna there. So these both sides should be cultivated simultaneously. What is our real necessity? To serve Radha and Krishna, who are actual beauty. That is actual beauty. To appreciate what is the beauty of Krishna, what is the beauty of Krishna's names, forms, activities, associates, qualities, this we should cultivate. How wonderful is Krishna? How beautiful is the form of Radha and Krishna? How Krishna is attractive to Radha? How Radha is attractive to Krishna? Simultaneously understand that this is not the attraction between Radha and Krishna is not something like our attraction towards the other imitation enjoyers of this material world. So all this is required. What is Vrindavan? What is Braja Leela? Well, Radha and Krishna. This Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to teach. Anarpita Chirin Chirat Kruni Avatirna Kalo Samapiyatam Anatajvala Rasa Srabhakti Shriyam. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's special gift is to inform us and bring us to the topmost splendid pastime of Radha and Krishna. That is his special gift, that is achieved by chanting the holy names. What are the results of chanting the holy names? Cheto darpanam arjanam bhava mahadavagini varpanam, cleansing the mirror of the heart, becoming freed from the burning fire of material existence. But that is not all. There are seven specific results of chanting the holy names that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu mentions. We become infused with transcendental knowledge, and ultimately we come to the blissful life of Krishna consciousness. Anandam buddhi vardhanam pratipadam purnamrita svadana. That amrita svadana comes when we adopt the mood yugayatam nimeshena chakshusha pravishayatam shunyayatam jagatsavam govinda virahena. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is especially taught love of Krishna in separation, or at least to see that this mood is felt. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told this in the mood of Radharani, and the topmost devotees, the Goswamis, they also were having this mood. Gopi Bhava Rasamritabdi Lahari Kalola Magno Muhur. They were always diving and surfacing in the waves of Gopi's love for Krishna. So we should at least aspire to serve the servants of the servants of the servants of those who are in such an exalted situation. So if we have actually attained that desire, then we cannot desire the mundane, absurd lust. So both things. We should understand what is the binding force in material existence. Mundane desires, particularly sexual desires. What is the actual desire? The desire to serve the dust of the lotus feet of the servants of the servants of the servants of the servants of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna, who are the real beauty, the real goal of life. Radha Krishna Pranamo Jugala Kisho Jivane Marane Gati Arnahima Rotam Dasyas. That Radha and Krishna are my very life, and that I desire nothing else in either living or in death. So this mood we can cultivate. This is Krishna consciousness, especially that given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And this should be preached. People should know what is the gift of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. What is the special thing he has come to give? People in Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, people in South India, they know Lakshmi.